And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey. 724-283-2525. It's Butler County's only live call-in talk show. It's your turn. Weekdays from 12:30 to 2 on 680 AM WISR and worldwide on the internet at WISR680.com. It's your turn. 724-283-2525. And now, it's your turn with Dave Mullarkey.
Good afternoon once again, everyone. Welcome. Nice to have you with us. Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. I'm not surprised so much that it's Thursday, but it's June 8th already. So we're just over a week into June. Of course, it has looked and felt like April, not June, but that's changing today. In fact, it's turned into a pretty nice day here, and the temperatures are starting to climb, and it's going to feel like June by the weekend. We have a good program today. A little bit later on, the president of Butler County Community College will be here, Dr. Nick Neupower. Will be visiting with us. As you know, we talk with Dr. Neupower on a periodic basis. There have been a lot of news about higher education over the past couple of months. Looking forward to chatting with him. And it just so happens that among our first guests, we have a history prof at Butler County Community College. Deborah Kruger is here. Deborah, good to see you again.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for having me.
We first talked, I don't know. Let's see. This is the Tuesday was the 73rd anniversary of D-Day. I'm going to guess it was 3 years ago, perhaps on the 70th anniversary. I know we did an interview about World War II.
I believe so, yes.
And that's what we're going to talk about today. Pat Collins is here. Pat's the director of the Butler County Historical Society. And I found out just about a week or so ago, I guess it was on Memorial Day, that a traveling exhibition, Pat, is coming to Butler, and it's going to be hosted by the Butler County Historical Society. Give us the details.
It is, and anyone who came a couple years ago for the Civil War traveling exhibit that the Hinds put together was able to enjoy that and experience it, and they've done the same thing now to support the smaller organizations in Western Pennsylvania that we all have a mission of sharing our history and how it affected our residents. And the Hinds has really stepped up with this traveling exhibit, and they bring it in, and we're going to have it for 7 weeks.
When does it open here in Butler?
We'll open on June 17th. That's a Saturday.
Pretty soon.
Yes.
Next weekend.
Next weekend. Yeah. We're going to be open Saturdays, well, Wednesdays through Sundays through this exhibit, and have some evening hours on Thursdays and Fridays so that people can get there who normally can't because of work.
And where will the exhibit be set up?
We'll be set up in the parlors at the Senator Walter Lowry House right behind the courthouse.
Mm-hmm. That's the headquarters of the Butler County Historical Society.
Yes.
Can you... Do you know what the exhibit consists of? Is it big panels or is it mementos?
Well,
or
it's kind of a little bit of everything. It's basically the same setup as the Civil War. It's almost a barrel shaped displays in the corners, and then they have other things. They have some artifacts. This one though has three or four video small video screens that tell part of the story, as well as what they have printed and on the display areas. They also have the figures, the lifelike. I mean, these, they're not wax because they're, you know, they're not saying you have to have your building so cold, but they are made of something that makes them look so real, like real skin. And
so they're 3D.
They're standing there. It's a magnificent thing. And one of those characters, if anyone remembers seeing the six Marines putting up the flag
on Suribachi,
at Iwo Jima, one of those men was Mike Strank. He was a Marine from Conemaugh, PA. And he is one of the characters that they recreated. So he will be there.
Wow. Yeah. There is a monument of that event, and Deborah Kruger, I'm sure you know that, down in Washington, D.C., huge monument, and there's also a copy of it at Quantico, at the entrance to the Marine base there at Quantico. That's a fabulous, one of the most famous photographs ever taken, the picture of that flag raising on Suribachi. Well, gosh, this is going to be exciting. We'll go over the details again about, you know, when it's going to be open and so on and so forth. Thing to remember, folks, it opens week from Saturday, next weekend. And 7 weeks it's going to be here, so that's wonderful.
7 weeks give everybody a lot of opportunity, especially if they're away on vacation. And they'll be able to get back. And hopefully we've given them days that they're able to, you know, be off work and bring their families. And then Mondays and Tuesdays, technically we're closed, but if there are groups that want to bring 10 or 15 people at a time, they can call ahead and schedule. So that we you know, don't overrun the place and you don't have you know, time to look at everything. So we will do special openings if people want to call and schedule a time.
Will there be a charge, an admission charge to see this, Pat?
No, this is a free thing that's done by the Heinz and sponsors. There is a donation box always, and anyone who would like to donate certainly may.
Wow. I can't wait to see it. Sounds like a lot of fun. Deborah Kruger is with us. She's a history prof at BC3. And I don't know, do you teach general history, American history, everything in the world history?
Pretty much everything in the world, but one of my main focuses is American history.
Ah, okay. That's always been a favorite subject of mine. I loved it in when I was in high school, I guess even junior high school. But I took, almost by accident, a couple of electives in history when I was in undergraduate school. And that's when I really fell in love with history because it wasn't, you know, you weren't reading a history book. I can remember I walked into my first American history class and, you know, the professor said, well, here's your book list. And I thought, book list? I thought we just got a book, you know, like in other classes. And it was like 10 books, the Federalist Papers, some other stuff. So we weren't reading someone else's history. We were reading history, you know, and then talking about it. That was great fun. Do you think, specifically now talking about the Second World War, we're over 70 years past, is it becoming something that, I'm guessing for college students, the young people that you teach, obviously they weren't around. They don't have any personal knowledge of this. They might as well be reading about, I don't know, Napoleon or something, huh?
I think this was such a huge war in American history. It encompassed so much of society that I'm finding, even with the young people today, with the college students, they have a tremendous interest in World War II. They still have family members who they can recall that they've heard stories about, that whether it's a great uncle or a grandparent, and so they still kind of have that collective memory. And it, World War II covered so much of American society. You know, by the end of the war, we had over 12 million Americans in active duty service. We only had 150 million people in America at that time. So if you look at that, every aspect of American society was focused on this war, whether it was rationing or whether it was women working in the factories, scrap drives, you know, everybody who grew up during that time period was involved and has memories of it. And I think that's been passed down more so than in, even in any other wars, because it was a war that just shaped us. I mean, we put everything on hold. You didn't have a car made in America. You didn't have a refrigerator made in America. Every factory, including like the Heinz factory, switched over to gliders production. We didn't make ketchup. We were making gliders for the war.
Here in Butler, we were making torpedo shells at the Bantam car plant, which is only a couple hundred yards from where we're sitting right now. Mainly women working in that factory, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. So every single aspect of our society was focused on winning that war effort. And I don't think that we've had that sense in America. And I think it's still very much a part of our collective memory because we still have the World War II generation with us. We're losing them quickly, unfortunately, but we do still have folks that can tell us those stories. And it's been really well written about and
And in mass media,
a lot of interest. Yeah, exactly.
Films, there are still films being made about World War II today. And with the outlets such as Turner Classic Movies, on Memorial Day weekend for 4 days in a row, they ran nonstop war movies.
Mm-hmm.
So in the mass media, it's still widely represented. New books come out all the time. I just, was it last week, interviewed John C. McManus, a well-respected historian. It was actually his second or third time I've had him on the program. He's down in Baltimore area. And he continues to write books on World War II. One we were talking about when he was with us on the program was the Operation Market Garden, the failed British and American mission to capture bridges in Holland.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still very much in the news. And a couple of days ago, there were radio stories, there were TV stories about a few remaining veterans who managed to get back to Normandy on the anniversary of D-Day. They're all in their 90s now, so they're not exactly traveling all over the world at the drop of a hat. But so you still find among young people, that's refreshing for me, that there's still an interest there and still at least a little bit of knowledge, huh?
Yeah, I think so. I think one of the things that I like about this exhibit is that it's called the We Can Do It exhibit, and it the symbol behind it is the iconic Rosie the Riveter.
Mm-hmm.
And that image was actually made by a man who was commissioned by the Westinghouse plant in Pittsburgh. And he designed 42 posters, and that was one of his posters.
Mm.
And it came out in the right around end of 1942, and at the same time it came out, a song was produced, a popular song, which was the Rosie the Riveter song. And so that's kind of how the name got associated with this image he had made of a woman worker with her arm in a fist. You know, we can
sleeve
do this.
Sleeve rolled up. I've seen it 100 times.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the exhibit focuses on that, and it focuses what ordinary citizens did. It also has interviews with David McAuliffe and Dan Rooney, who were young kind of teenage boys, preteen boys during the war, and they talk about what they did for scrap drives and how much they remember being involved in the effort. And that's one of the things that, you know, I do really stress with my students is Hitler underestimated America. He said all we could do was make refrigerators, and we were basically, he honestly said we were kind of a mixed race society that mm-hmm. was absolutely not a threat to him at all. He wasn't worried about us.
He was speaking from his viewpoint of Aryan superiority. Yeah.
And yet by the end of the war, Pittsburgh had produced 95 million tons of steel, which outproduced all of the Axis nations combined. And so the American people, it wasn't just our troops on the ground. I mean, we have read a lot about that. We know about that. But this exhibit really focuses on how the whole American nation came together to win this war. We were the arsenal democracy, and Pittsburgh was absolutely, and Butler as an extension of Pittsburgh, was a huge, huge contributing factor to that.
And of course, we had the Jeep here, the birthplace mm-hmm. of the Jeep. So we kind of figure in pretty prominently.
Something we should be very proud of, yes.
Yeah. Listeners, if you're joining us a little bit late, a lot of folks listen to the radio in the car, especially at this hour of the day and the noon hour. We're talking about a new World War II traveling exhibition that's going to be opening next weekend at the Butler County Historical Society. It's a World War II exhibit, and it's entitled, as Deborah Kruger just said, We Can Do It. And it's going to be up, the exhibit will be up, at the Historical Society offices right behind the courthouse for 7 weeks. So there'll be a wonderful opportunity to see this exhibit, maybe even go a couple of times. I plan to.
Sure.
Make sure that I see everything. Maybe I only have an hour the first time, and maybe I want to go back and look again. You know, that's fine.
There's a lot there. They
this
did
a
great job.
Rare opportunity.
Yes.
I've seen some World War II artifacts. I would love sometime to go to, there's a World War II museum in New Orleans, of all places. I think it's where they, one of the places they built the Higgins boat. I think that's why it's down there. I'm not sure. Landy Craft.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a huge museum. I'd love to go to that sometime. Yeah. So this exhibit opens a week from Saturday, and we'll go over the hours again before we wrap up here. But it's so exciting. I wanted to talk about it a little bit. I just read a story, speaking of local involvement in World War II, and I forget why I was researching this on the internet, but I ended up in Altoona. Oh, no, I know what it was. I was looking for, you know, the internet can be such a time killer. Somebody had asked me where the name Altoona comes from, the name of the town. I said, well, it's a probably, I don't know, Native American Indian. I took a stab. I have no idea. Well, it turns out that there's competing stories as to where Altoona came from. But anyway, when I was looking it up, naturally, the Altoona curve pops up.
Yes.
And one of the threads that I saw on there is that there were Nazi saboteurs that landed by submarine in the United States, and one of their targets was the Altoona curve. They were going to blow up that because that's the main rail line to get supplies to and from the Midwestern part of the country. The operation, whatever it was called, I forget, it was compromised and nothing ever happened. I never heard that story before.
Well, we in this area had to be very aware of that because Pittsburgh is such a hub between New England and then also the river routes going down towards New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
So we're kind of that part of that highway system, almost that interhighway system of manufacturing, and we were a huge manufacturing. So you've got the Armco plant here in Pittsburgh. They had Armco had used to have been in big letters on their roof, you know, very very proud of their plant. They had to get rid of all that because they were concerned about saboteurs during the war. So you had to take all the symbols and all of the kind of markings off of your high production plants because Armco was absolutely enormous towards the war effort with what they were producing.
Hmm. I never thought about that, but surveillance planes would be taking photographs all the time. Of course, nowadays you do that by satellite, but back in those days you had to have surveillance planes. But yeah, if it said Armco across the roof, they'd know right where it was. They were making plans to bomb. Boy, thank goodness that never happened, huh? I mean, here in this country, we sacrificed a lot in terms of lives and treasure, but we weren't occupied, thank goodness. Yeah. World War II traveling exhibit coming to Butler. Now, this exhibit was put together by the Heinz History Foundation. Did they have any help from... did they have help the last time they put an exhibit together from the Smithsonian or something like that?
Well, they get sponsors.
Oh, okay.
This display is being sponsored. I know that Erie Insurance Group is one of the sponsors. The IMLS, which is the Museum and Library System Group, can't think of the proper name right now, and... I'm going to draw a blank. There's at least a third or fourth one there. And, of course, it's the people at the Heinz History Center, which is an affiliate of the Smithsonian Institute.
That's right. They are affiliated.
That's how their affiliation is. And they actually have one of our early bantams on display at the Heinz that belongs to the Smithsonian. Since they're an affiliate, they are able to borrow that and have it in the museum down there.
Mm-hmm. That Heinz History Center, by the way, what a place. If you've never been there, folks, what a museum that is. That's marvelous.
And always changing. They always are working ahead, and they certainly have professional people who do such a great job with research and presentation, and they're always a help.
Now, I understand that there'll be several museum figures who are featured. We mentioned one, Michael Strank, who was part of the flag raising, the Marines raising the flag on Mount Suribachi. One of the Tuskegee Airmen,
yes.
Lieutenant Carl Woods, will be depicted.
He's a Butler County resident.
I think he's from around Mars.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's somebody from around Mars in this, and I'm sorry, I just can't retain...
I didn't know there were any of the Tuskegee Airmen. It's a fabulous story.
Absolutely.
History Prof Deb Kruger, give us a thumbnail sketch of that, Tuskegee Airmen.
Just in brief, they were a group of African-American pilots who were formed a unit down near Tuskegee, Alabama, and then went over and were initially set up in North Africa after the victories in North Africa to raid up into Germany and Italy, fighter squadrons and protective
squadrons.
They flew
protection
for the bombers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they were highly decorated, just very, very well respected for their skill. Both those men, from what I was reading about the exhibit, lost their lives in the war.
Uh-huh.
Both the Iwo Jima, Michael Strank, and... our Tuskegee Airmen.
Yes.
By the way, the United States Army and the United States military was segregated in World War II. That must be kind of shocking when some of your students, young adults, hear that if they didn't I didn't know that already.
Yes. It wasn't integrated until Truman integrated the Army in the late 1940s before the Korean War. The Korean War was the first American war to be integrated since the American Revolution, because the American Revolution was integrated. So we started out okay and went backwards for a while, unfortunately.
Still hard for me to believe that, you know, the U.S. military, the U.S. Army segregated in World War II. So that's why we had the Tuskegee Airmen. They were all African-Americans. There was some believed that they wouldn't, for some reason, be good fighter pilots. They turned out to be the best we had.
Absolutely.
To the point where, at least I've read, I don't know if you can back me up on this or not, some of the bomber squadrons actually requested that the Tuskegee Airmen fly their cover whenever they were flying from England to Germany and then back again. They wanted the Tuskegee Airmen to fly cover for them because they were so good.
Absolutely, they were requested. Yes.
Now we had one from Butler County. This is so great to learn this. Let's see, who else? Oh, you mentioned Rosie the Riveter, Deborah. And then General George C. Marshall.
Yes.
Yeah, that's exciting. He's from
Uniontown,
Fayette County. And he was, let's see, what did Winston Churchill call him? The true organizer of victory. So he's extremely important general to the war.
He was the general who masterminded things here at home, right? He was like the Secretary of War, wasn't a cabinet member, but
he was the Army Chief of Staff from 1939 to 1945.
I should have known. I'm sitting here with a history prof. She's going to know that.
He became Secretary of State after.
I knew that he wasn't in either Europe or the Pacific Theater because that was Eisenhower was obviously the supreme commander in Europe. And then we had Patton and Omar Bradley and some of those other legendary names.
MacArthur in the Pacific,
MacArthur in the Pacific, yeah.
Well, he was also he was instrumental as Secretary of State after the war in the rebuilding of Europe, the Marshall Plan.
Oh, yes.
Which was absolutely enormous to rebuilding Western Europe, very, very significant.
I'll be interested to see the figure of him, the lifelike figure of him, because I don't know what he looks like. I know I recognize the name, but I don't recall ever seeing a picture of him. Eisenhower, of course, you could pick out in a second. There's so many photographs of him.
And he won the Nobel Peace Prize for the Marshall Plan.
Didn't know that either. Well, these are little things you could learn when you visit this traveling exhibit. By the way, I understand it's not making many stops. Kind of a feather in your cap, Pat Collins,
for the
Butler County Historical Society to be selected as one of only, is it eight sites?
18. I think a total of 18 is what they're shooting for because the Civil War was out 30 or 40 times. It was hard on the equipment. It was, I'm sure, hard on their employees, you know, bringing it and setting it up and coming back 3 weeks later and getting it. Everyone asked to have expanded time periods this time to allow the public a better chance to come and see everything. Like you said, some people want to come back a second time because there's so much to take in that they have done that, and they were very selective this time in picking where it would go and getting it centralized so that people from the whole area could go to one place and get to see it while it's set up, and hopefully we'll see how it ends up at the end of, I think in 2020 is the last scheduled dates. Then if it's still, if they're able, they'll take it out maybe some more, but at this point that's their plan. So Butler is very lucky to get it right here in the center of the county.
And one of the first stops, right, on this traveling.
We are second. I think a lot of people don't realize it's down in Beaver County, there is a company that did the helicopter. 5 minutes ago, I could have told you the name of it. They were very, very instrumental in the war efforts. So it did start out down in Beaver County. Then it's coming here. When it leaves Butler, it's going up to Erie, actually for the fall months before it comes back towards the south. I think actually, except for Erie, we may be the most northern place that it's going.
Well, I wouldn't be surprised if Butler, as birthplace of the Jeep, put us pretty high on the list as one of the early stops of this exhibit.
Hopefully that helped a little We were able to share with them artifacts and information when they were putting this together, mm-hmm. and had a display in-house down there for a while, that we work well with the Hines and the folks that work there. And they wanted to make sure it got out and that the public all has a chance to enjoy it and learn from it. And I'm real excited to be getting it in the building. It's a real plus for us.
Fantastic, sure. Yeah. When you're teaching American history, Deborah Kruger's here from BC3. Is it just like a survey course in American history, or do you split it into, I think I remember, it's been quite a few years ago now, but it was, like from the Age of Discovery up until, 1812 or something, and then you had to take another course if you wanted more than that. Or do you try to do it all at once?
Oh, my gosh, we could never do it all in one semester. We do. It's a survey class, but it's a survey one and a survey two, so we teach the Columbus Age of Discovery till right after the Civil War, mm-hmm. and then the second semester would pick up with the Civil War to modern times. Mm-hmm. We're fortunate now we do have a course in the American Civil War, which is offered by Mr. Brad Floof, who's one of our adjunct professors there, and he's phenomenal.
Know him. He's been a guest on our program a number of times.
Yes. Yeah, so that's been great for us to be able to offer a course in just that war, because there's such a huge interest in the Civil War. And I know students have talked to me about we should offer courses in the World War II, because this is probably another area of just an immense interest, mm-hmm. with students, is the World War II era.
Well, there's so many different factors to it. First of all, from America's standpoint, the European theater and the Pacific theater, two drastically different operations halfway around the world from each other. But there's also the philosophical and sociological aspect of this with the Holocaust. I mean, you can't talk about World War II without, spending a couple of days or a couple of weeks on the Holocaust. I mean, my goodness, it's still almost unimaginable.
It's a very defining war in many sense. I teach a course on 20th century world history as well. Uh-huh. And particularly for that course, between World War I and World War II, they are the defining events for the entire world for the 20th century. You don't have a lot of the things that come after 1945 without what happens in World War I and World War II. It's really the trigger or the start of the decolonization and the Cold War and the arms races and the space races and, what's happening throughout the entire world, the lesser developed countries, the more developed countries, all of them. So it's a very, very important key moment in time.
That's one reason why I'm a history nut. I read a lot of history, but I'm certainly not educated in history. But I'm one of the concerns I have about Brexit, about Great Britain leaving the EU, the European Union. If you look at history, even over the past 200 years, how many times Europe has been at war within itself over stupid things? The killing of some relatively unknown guy in Sarajevo starts a world war, for goodness sakes. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've started, in some cases, over just the dumbest things. And it's not just World War I and World War II. You mm-hmm. go back much further than that. And here we've had, with the European Union, we've had 70 years of peace, where these countries have not gone to battle with each other. And I worry if that breaks up,
Yeah, it's all part of those alliances and the interrelationships. But you look at the start of World War I, we talk about it being just a little trigger of a lesser-known official from the Austro-Hungarian Empire. But if you study the root causes of that, it was the same type of thing. They had had peace since the Franco-Prussian War in 1871, basically, and they kind of got complacent with that. Mm-hmm. They just kind of rested on that peace, but it was building. It was the building of the competition and the building of the arms and the military, and it all just erupted. And I think, unfortunately, we always say history repeats itself, but it unfortunately tends to do that. It's just the story of human beings, and we just keep making the same mistakes over again.
Yeah, and you look at the history of France and Germany, they're buddy-buddy right now and have been for 70 years, but boy, you look at their history, World War II and prior, they did not get along.
Not at all.
Now we have the threat of the Soviet Union, and do they want to recover all of their satellite countries that were once behind the Iron Curtain and are now free, Estonia, Latvia.
Ukraine.
Part of Ukraine has already been taken.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just scary. Very scary. Yeah. Well, we'll see. We don't want to leave this on a downer here, but it's a concern. So keep watching that European Union. Hope that it doesn't mm-hmm. fall apart. Where are their headquarters? Brussels, right?
Yes, I believe so.
Brussels. Again, I want to go over the details of this exhibition, this exhibit that comes to Butler. It opens next Saturday, not this weekend, but the following weekend. And it's going to be open several days a week, Pat Call.
We're going to be open Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays, Saturday, and Sunday. Variety of hours. We have flyers. If anyone wants one, they can call up and we'll mail one out. Wednesdays, we're going to open at 10 in the morning and be there till about 5.
Mm-hmm.
And we're asking people that want to come up and tour and take their time to be there maybe by 4 so that we can wrap up around 5. Thursdays and Fridays, we're going to open at noon and be open till 8 o'clock. Saturdays and Sundays, we're going to do 11 to 4. People have time to get to church and go to lunch and then come up. Hopefully that fits into their busy schedule. And then Thursday and Friday mornings, we can do group tours, and Mondays and Tuesdays.
Call in advance to make arrangements.
Call in advance to make arrangements, and we'll get everybody in. And they have 7 weeks to do this, starting June 17th.
It's going to be exciting. I can't wait to see it. Fun. Let me ask history prof Deborah Kruger, who can take your course? Can just a student that's majoring in anything at BC3 take your course, or do they have to be a history major, or what's the deal?
The majority of my students are majoring in many, many other subjects.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much anybody could take one of my classes or one of our other history professors' classes. I know our Civil War class is offered at night, so the general public could take that as well if they have an interest in that subject.
Mm-hmm. And there are a variety of history courses available at BC3?
Yes, we have at least 7 to 8 different courses usually offered every semester.
Mm-hmm. What's a good book to read? We want to learn about World War II. What about the Band of Brothers?
Oh, Band of Brothers is excellent. The video series is excellent if you're not a big reader, but the book by Stephen Ambrose is probably one of the most iconic books. In fact, my husband's uncle he just recently passed away. He was part of that Greatest Generation, and he was second day Omaha Beach D-Day as a medic. Mm-hmm. He had actually been not graduated. He was taken out of high school when he turned 18 to be trained for that. And I remember one Christmas, he basically handed the book of Band of Brothers to everybody in the family, and he said, except for the jumping out of the airplanes part, this was my war, because
mm-hmm.
he was at Battle of the Bulge, all of it. So that's a very good overview of the European theater.
It's a good introduction, and there are several books by those members of Easy Company as well. But some folks have said, Saving Private Ryan, the film, don't forget, folks, that's fiction. I mean, it's a mm-hmm. powerful film, but that's fiction. Band of Brothers really happened.
Yeah.
And those guys, those are real guys, and they were really there.
Unbroken is another excellent book by Laura Hildenbrand. That's a more of a Pacific side. It's about mm-hmm. a pilot who was a prisoner of war during the Pacific, but that's another excellent book.
Well, thanks for the recommendations.
You're welcome.
I've read both of them already. So.
We do have a couple books up at the Historical Society. Letters from the Greatest Generation. Richard Curry did this book, these
yes.
books, and their interviews, their information from the men around Butler mm-hmm. who served. So anybody that really wants that,
yeah, check those, and many other books are available for purchase at the Historical Society. Well, thanks both of you for being here. It's good. Can't wait to see this exhibit. Yeah, more to come on It's Your Turn. We'll take a break. We'll be back in a couple of minutes with the next segment of our program. So stick with us. Be back in just a couple of minutes.
Hello, I'm Chris O'Donnell with Central Electric Cooperative. Central Electric does everything it can to keep costs down for members. If we can reduce electricity purchased during high demand periods, we will help stabilize future power costs for our members. You can help. When you hear a peak alert announcement on the radio, please turn off all non-essential electric items, especially dehumidifiers and pool pumps, and set your air conditioner no lower than 78 degrees. Our peak alerts and the radio broadcast usually occur in the summer months from June to September, and typically in the afternoon between noon and 6 p.m. Alerts usually last between 4 to 6 hours. So, be alert for peak alerts. With your help, we can help keep your energy bill down. This is Chris O'Donnell with Central Electric Cooperative, powering everyday life for 80 years. This institution is an equal opportunity provider and employer.
There's no denying we enjoy dining out, and we love to cut a rug on occasion as well. It's my pleasure to announce that you can put that dining and dancing together at Tanglewood every second Saturday of the month. A buffet dinner prepared by Chef George starts at 6:30, dancing from 7:30 till 10:30, just $16 per person. Come for just the dance and pay only $8. As always, it's BYOB. Break out your dancing shoes and work up an appetite for Tanglewood's dinner dance every second Saturday of the month. Call 287-0021 for reservations.
Back to Pittsburgh we go with no clear-cut answer yet. That won't stop Thursday night from being some of the most heart-pounding action we've seen so far. Join us for Penguins Live pregame with Josh Getzoff and Colby Armstrong at 7:30, followed by the call of the Penguins and the Predators in Game 5 of the Stanley Cup Final from PPG Paints Arena at 8. Control the motion and a laser focus right here on the Penguins Radio Network.
Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup playoff action brought to you in part by the law firm of Dillon, McCandless, King, Coulter, and Grant. Monday Shoes, Next Tier Bank, Camisa's Auto Body, John Thrower Cement Corporation, McDonald Plumbing and Heating, and Robert Stevens Custom Jewelers.
Tune into WISR 680 AM Sunday mornings for these programs. Senior Voice at 710 AM, The Rosary at 8, Church of God at Conakinesing at 8:30, followed by church services from St. Paul's Roman Catholic Church at 9:15 and First Baptist Church at 11.
Back, friends. Nice to have you with us on the Thursday edition of It's Your Turn. What a wonderful World War II exhibit coming to Butler opening next weekend. And we thank Pat Collins from the Historical Society and also Deborah Kruger, who's a history prof at Butler County Community College. And guess what? Dr. Nick Neupower knew her whenever she... I'm just joking, of course. We passed in the hallway. The president of Butler County Community College visits with us on the next segment of the program, Dr. Nick Neupower. Good to see you again, sir.
Thank you, Dave. Always great to be here.
Also with us is Jess Matnock. She's the executive director of communications and marketing. Jess, always good to see you.
You too, Dave.
Yeah. Well, I got to talk with one of your history professors last time out. She's pretty impressive. I would love to take her course, I'll tell you that.
A superstar. We've had the benefit of her husband, Randy, teaching for us in physical therapy for a number of years. And when I was Dean of Humanities and Social Sciences, Deb was an adjunct for us, a part-timer. Then she went off to New Brighton and worked for the New Brighton Schools. And an opportunity presented itself when Dr. Weisberger retired. You know, mm-hmm. Bill's a legend, not only nationally, but certainly at BC3. And Deb applied for the position, national search, and we were lucky enough to have her talents. And certainly hear excellent things from the academic side of the house as to how well Deb does. But actually, even in the Neupower household, because Paige, our oldest daughter, had Deb for one or two classes and said that she just learned so much from Professor Kruger.
Mm-hmm. I accidentally started taking some history courses in the latter part of my undergraduate career, too, and kind of fell in love with it. So it's always been one of my favorite subjects. Still is.
Yes.
Still read a lot of history. There has been a whole bunch of news that relates to higher education here in Pennsylvania since the last time we talked, which was a couple of months ago, I think. I don't remember for sure, but my goodness gracious, there's news all over the place with the, in fact, it was just a story, I think it was in the Post-Gazette this morning, did I check it, maybe it was just yesterday, because I clipped it right away. Students embracing community college, this was in the business section of the Post-Gazette this morning.
Yeah.
Survey, high schoolers embracing community colleges. trying to avoid massive debt whenever they finish their education.
Yes. Great editorial in Sunday's Butler Eagle, written about the strength of Butler County Community College.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the listeners, so I've been in the position 10 years, and you might think that this is company line. What else would the president of Butler County Community College say? We're really on the front end of, I think, a big paradigm shift, very big shift in a movement, frankly. And not that we're without issues or problems, but as you said, David, take one look at our state and our Commonwealth and even narrow it down to the region. And the community colleges are positioned very well, might I add. The Commonwealth number one community college seems to be positioned incredibly well. This PASHE study that has been a Pennsylvania State System of Higher Education study that was sponsored by the Senate, I forget the senator who sponsored it in Pennsylvania. That's big news, and we're preparing for it. We're hearing certain things. There's a lot of turnover right now in PASHE presidents. Dr. Whitney from Clarion just announced this week that that she's leaving. Of course, Dr. Way taking over for Dr. Norton. There were at least a couple of other presidents who were hired elsewhere in the state. And the community colleges, I believe, because of our success, because of our local connection, I'll talk a little bit more about that later, because of our local board, because of the flexibility that we have, the affordable tuition, we're independent, we're not part of a larger structure and a larger system. We're seeing it, we're feeling it, we're sensing it, feeling it with the donation dollars that are coming in. This summer we'll have some other great announcements with enrollment increases, albeit slight, Shore Beach being down 10-11%, what have you. And we're receiving a lot of national coverage. Jess can maybe even speak to some national press coverage that we've received for what we're doing at BC3. I have not had an opportunity to see that in the Post-Gazette yet, but I do think it's symbolic with the strength of the community colleges in our Commonwealth, but specifically BC3.
Mm-hmm. National publicity? Yes, Matt Knock, that's pretty good.
Well, we have a writer on our staff, Bill Foley, who's really excellent, and he did put some news out about our students being accepted into the capstone semester at Penn State for nanofabrication.
Mm-hmm.
And it was picked up by the Community College Daily, and then subsequently from the AACC, their 21st Century Center, which is their online newsroom. And that's the American Association of Community Colleges. Mm-hmm. So they definitely took notice of that and how great that connection is and that specific program of nanofabrication. And so we were able to get that and BC3's name out on more of a national platform.
Mm-hmm. Nanofabrication, is that this like these 3D printer things? Is that what we're talking about, or is this something else?
It involves that
a part of it anyway.
Yes, yeah.
Somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I'm not super familiar with the program in itself, but I do know that we have some partnerships. I believe that concern the program and that it can be used in different fields.
Mm-hmm. Definitely a STEM-related field. And of course,
it's technology-based, yeah.
And that's scoring very well. We spent a lot of time at our cabinet meeting today talking about our role in technology. And we've talked about this before, Dave. As a matter of fact, maybe I'll even tie this to something that I wanted to talk about. Several of us went to a conference in Vermont, first time I've ever been to Vermont, Burlington, and absolutely beautiful. And we're part of a consortium with about 7 or 8 other colleges nationally. And the reason that we were in Vermont has wonderful economic development approaches, mostly focusing on agriculture. Ben & Jerry's started in Burlington, and we had a tour of Ben & Jerry's.
Didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Actually, a few of us drove and drove to Syracuse and then over the Adirondacks to Burlington. Absolutely beautiful. And much of what was talked about, a futurist spoke about the future of higher education and talked about the significance of the local role for colleges and universities. The significance of decentralization, not being part of a large conglomerate, not being part of a system, but the independence and the ability to control your own destiny, and that ability that matches with the local, whether it be the city of Butler, the county, the region, because we're a regional institution. And boy, it really hit home, particularly with this PASCHE study and what's going on elsewhere, is that now the motto on 2017 and going forward, had a projection of 2030, is the role of the college or university in the local economy. Mm. Now, we're one of 32 public institutions, and certainly our role in the Commonwealth is very important, but this was much, much more narrow. And the fact that we have a local board that is appointed by county commissioners would be an example. There's not an extra layer in Harrisburg. We have a local board chaired by Mr. Steffler. So it really resonated, and these are national speakers and futurists, and the fact that there's a lot of media coverage that is correlating to this is that this is the time for community colleges, not only to elevate the communities we serve, but of course because of the affordability aspect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 32 institutions of higher education in Pennsylvania, that would be the 14 community colleges, right?
Correct.
And then the state system schools, Slippery Rock, IUP, Clarion, so on and so forth, which is, I don't know exactly how many of those there are. There was 14 of those, too, I think. Yeah.
Correct.
Because then it would be Pitt, Penn State, Temple, and Lincoln.
Lincoln, you got it.
So those would be, that's the 32 schools.
Ah. Yeah, so the history with the universities, many of them started as normal schools for teaching. And then there was a movement towards state teachers' colleges. You may recall in our listeners, Slippery Rock State Teachers College.
I can remember that name. I don't remember anything further back than that.
Then Slippery Rock College, and then in 83 was the bringing together and turning the state colleges into the universities. Although IUP was always a university and is considered one of the flagships.
And has always been one of the largest enrollment of the state schools.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there are larger issues that come into play. Tuition, across academic calendar, governance, what have you. And the 14 community colleges are represented in the Commonwealth, and we strategically talk about us being a sector, not a system. We have the sector, and we're dues-paying members to the Community College Association, the Commission of Community Colleges in Harrisburg. And that's a level of consistency whenever we file for capital grants, state grants, our message to the legislators in Harrisburg. So really, in my opinion, I'm not sure when I started as president in 07 that I fully understood this. It's really the best of all worlds. You know, we're considered a sector. There's 14 of us. There's not a larger governance structure. We have independence in terms of setting our own tuition fees, our academic programs, going into underserved areas.
Your calendar you can set on your own, right? Whereas the state schools all have the same one.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this conference that we went to really talked a great deal about the local connection and the decentralizing of higher education. So again, it seems like that we're on the cusp of something even bigger whenever it comes to the community colleges and specifically BC3.
There was another story that caught my eye within the past few weeks. This was last month. And it was something that's going to be called the Rural Regional College of Northern Pennsylvania. Have you heard about this thing?
Have you heard about it?
Yeah.
Well, the headline said, "Non-Traditional College will serve rural counties." And I think it's up in Erie. Something
well,
like that.
Northern Tier.
Some kind of a partnership with Gannon University. The article that I saw was a little bit vague, but I clipped it out only to ask you about it because...
I actually had that written down. I thought that might come up. And so let's go back in time. Oh, my goodness, 6 or 7 years. The first part of my presidency, I would say, heck, maybe the first several years of my presidency, as you know, there's certainly some controversy back home here. We thought that what we were doing was so effective and so strong, we're so strong as an institution, that we should not be constrained by imaginary county lines. So we then end up going from Butler County's community college to becoming a regional college. Lawrence County, Mercer County, Jefferson County, Armstrong County, and another location in Cranberry. When we, right before we got into Brockway, Jefferson County, we were being recruited in the Clarion area. And in one of those meetings, Senator Joe Scarnati, Senate pro temp, wonderful guy, can't emphasize that enough, said to me that there's a group that he's working with. At that time, the Educational Consortium of the Upper Allegheny, that, Nick, I would like to put you in touch with. Put us in touch with, and actually the Rural Regional Colleges Partnership started with BC3. And it started with us offering classes in an 11-county northern tier. And it eventually got to a point after a couple-year relationship where I thought that Brockway and Jefferson County would have been best served by BC3, and then this rural regional college could do its own thing. And I wanted to be very careful in paying the proper amount of respect to Senator Scarnati, and I explained that to him, that maybe this is a crossroads here. And to the senator's credit, he continued to support BC3 and our thriving campus in Brockway, Jefferson County, of which we service students from Clearfield, Jefferson, Clarion, and Elk, of which we're at a point now where that enrollment has grown to about 420 students. Hmm. It's a phenomenal model. And to Joe's credit, he's continued to support this rural regional college. The language is intentional. When I wore my hat as the board chair of the Pennsylvania Commission for Community Colleges, if this institution would become a 15th community college, I thought, and we all thought, that it should play by the same community college rules. Local sponsorship, state support, and tuition. And the reason that this is called the Rural Regional College is because that there's not local sponsorship. It is a state-funded institution that is in the northern tier that on paper is utilizing VOTECs, high schools, and what are called community education councils. At this point, it is utilizing Gannon's accreditation to offer classes, just like its first 2 years that it used our accreditation in offering classes. Right now is putting forward application to the Pennsylvania Department of Ed, and I think the reason that it was in the news recently is that it's looking like it'll get a green light from the Pennsylvania Department of Education. We wish it success. We intentionally use the language that it's a rural regional college, not a community college. And we let the entire Commonwealth know that there's 14 community colleges, and if there's expansion being analyzed in Erie or Titusville or in the northern tier, we think it's best to partner with an existing community college. Having said that, we wish the rural regional nothing but luck in going forward. The fact that you're reading this and it seems to be a bit vague, that's what I hear from most people. It's a new model. A day and age when funding for education in general is difficult, and yet there's new funding for a new institution. So your response is what we get most often, and our public statement is that as a community college, we're here to assist. For a rural regional college, we're happy to help in any way, and we certainly wish it a lot of luck.
Yeah, it just seems to be, your term was crossroads. I would agree. There was also a story on the wire within the past couple of weeks. Is it Pitt, Titusville that's questioning their Pitt has a campus in Titusville, and I think the headline was future uncertain or something like that. So it's a real time of foment and change in higher education.
Now let me add that, Dave. That was another thing that I had written down to talk about. In reading the study that is out there for Titusville, it's very important for the listeners to know there are four options that are presented, and the one that is represented is the Butler County Community College model. With our enrollment, what we're paying for leases, how the state supports us. So here it is, you have rural regional college Where does this start? In partnership with BC3. Titusville, looking for different options. Does it stay open? Sustainability. What happens with the community? And a model that's being proposed. It mentions Butler County Community College. Erie right now. Community College in Erie coming up again. Butler County Community College has worked with Erie and has submitted a proposal for consideration. Not that that would be a slam dunk for our board to accept it, but I hope that that speaks to the strength of our institution. And also, I've been on this show for 10 years now. Some of the early controversies whenever we adopted this model, which, as you recall, was very controversial. There were lawsuits. There was controversy played out in the media, the Armstrong Channel, the radio station, certainly Above the Fold and the Butler Eagle. And now let's go forward. Institutions are trying to get as much enrollment as possible, and some of that is going to these underserved areas. We're well beyond that. We did that 10 years ago, and it very much is correlated to the strength of the college.
And if institutions of higher education don't realize that there's a need for change and to adjust to the times and the demographics and so on and so forth, they're probably not going to make it.
Yeah.
I mean, we've seen some of the state schools in particular have drastic losses in enrollment.
And losses of revenue, and something that came up back and forth to the long drive to Vermont, talked about the newspaper industry. So we're rooted in journalism. And part of the downfall of that industry, this is opinion of one person, resistance to change. I was part of that. Came up on the car ride, riding with Ruth Purcell, husband Mark worked at the Eagle, Bill Foley, who was an editor at the Sunbury paper. And Bill gave a great perspective. I remember being in journalism school at Penn State and how the resistance from the journalism department, one professor in particular, with the USA Today, it's changing journalism for the worse. Think of that. Mm-hmm. And so how slow it was even to adopt to a paper with only one jump from page one, short stories, graphics, was called a McPaper, if you recall.
Yes, mockingly called.
Mockingly called.
McPaper.
And an example, and look at where the whole industry is, the newspaper industry is, with resistance to change. So your point, how does that apply to higher education? And higher education is certainly tied to tradition and history and generally slow to move. And I think your point's well taken. I think nationally, because of that, there are some institutions, public, private, two-year, and four-year, who are really at a crossroads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's even an analogy. It may limp a little bit, but if you're talking about changing or perhaps expiring, look at so many of the department store and wholesale department store activities. I mean, who would have believed Sears Holdings, which is Sears and Kmart? Well, I mean, from all intents, it looks like it's going down the drain. I mean, it's death by slow pricks right now. The latest one was the Kmart store in Butler. It's going to be closing this fall. Sears closed last year. Macy's is in trouble. Kaufman's, Gimbel's, Horns are all gone.
Yeah.
And the only ones that survived are the ones that adjusted and went at least partially to internet sales, not relying totally on brick and mortar.
Real quickly before you take a break. So in a different life, when I was at Marist, I taught and consulted a lot. And I was very lucky to have a consulting gig. I was managing editor of the Pension Real Estate Association's quarterly publication. And the purpose of PREA, Pension Real Estate Association, was to educate the state pension funds who invested in real estate. 1999, so you recall, good economy, strong economy. Interviewed a futurist by the name of Don Tapscott. And Tapscott, rather than calling them millennials, called the generation the net generation, and talked about this generation in 1999 being a generation that is bathed in bits. And his point was that the baby boomers will have a very hard time understanding the net generation, the millennials, because it'll be the first time in our history that there's a younger generation that has more expertise than an older generation. Talked about that. And his point in 1999 was how this would influence real estate and particularly malls. Mm. And sure enough, when I hear this news, which I've heard the last couple of days on the station, I think to this interview with Don Tapscott, who called it. And, you know, when we're growing up, my picture-perfect life growing up in Elwood City would have been living in a development, 2.9 kids, two cars, going to the mall. None of that. The cars, average children, going to the mall and living in a development. That's all out right now. It's all about public transportation, utilizing technology, living in a cool, hip, downtown area, and malls are becoming, you know, more and more a thing of the past. Mm-hmm.
So our point is to wrap up here, and this is fascinating because in terms of what we're discussing here today, the implications for education are you have to keep an eye on the future here.
Yeah.
You've got to be looking ahead if you're going to survive, if you're going to thrive, and make sure that if adjustments need to be made, you're making adjustments. We've talked about those over the past several months at BC3, how much distance ed is now going on and so forth. You wouldn't survive if you didn't do this kind of stuff.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break, and we'll be back to talk more here on the It's Your Turn program in a moment. By the way, coming up tomorrow, we're going to be talking with Bob Tattern. Bob Tattern is a sports broadcaster. He's extremely well-known in Pennsylvania, writer. He has 1,000 sports stories. Plus, he's just a good guy to talk with. I've had him on the program a couple of times. He's fun. And we're going to be doing some sports trivia and giving away some of the copies of Bob's latest book. It'll be fun. So I hope you can be with us. We're also going to be talking about racing at the Meadows tomorrow. They got another big event coming up this weekend. We'll tell you all about that, talking with the horse owner on tomorrow's program. Okay, take a break, and then we'll be back in just a moment. One of our sponsors is the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. They are well underway with their program of How Does Your Garden Grow? Just a reminder, if your garden's starting to come on, I know a lot of folks are just getting the garden in within the past couple of weeks, maybe Memorial Day weekend. Think about, you know, a couple of tomatoes a week or a couple of peppers or whatever later on the corn season, donating some of your excess produce to the Society of St. Vincent de Paul thrift store. They make it very easy. They'll be starting a collection program every Saturday morning. Just take your excess St. Michael's School Hall on Center Avenue, right behind St. Michael's Church, and they'll take it right from your car, and it'll be in the food bank on Monday for the needy families. Fresh produce, homegrown, wonderful, wonderful. And, you know, a lot of folks, you get too much. A lot of it comes on at the same time. You give tomatoes to Aunt Ethel and Uncle George, and what do? Well, just think about it. It's a good idea. They've done this for a couple of years now, and it's been a tremendous success. We stand the tallest when we stoop to help others, the Society of St. Vincent de Paul here in Butler. We will be right back after these words.
Hop the bus, leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way, getting there stops here. Just hop the bus, easy and economical. Just hop the bus, no car, no problem. The bus will get you there. Cause that's what we do. Hop the bus. Leave the driving up to us.
The bus.
We're going your way.
That frightening sound is one we hear quite often throughout the day. Our heart quickens and immediately we wonder what happened. A medical emergency can be frightening. Every tick of the clock crucial. And that's why Butler Ambulance Service is dedicated to be there with every ounce of care possible. Butler Ambulance Service is within minutes of providing you or a loved one with treatment and transportation. Call 282-9595 to find out more. Butler Ambulance Service is a phone call away from serving you.
Welcome back, folks. Chatting with us on the It's Your Turn program today is Dr. Nick Neupower, the president of Butler County Community College. Jess Matnock is here, too. She's the executive director of communications and marketing for the school. I'd like to mention a little bit about the state budget. It's kind of iffy because it always is this time of year. We're, 3 weeks away from the budget deadline, and you know, Who knows?
Yeah.
The way that the state legislature works is sometimes kind of strange. You know, they talk for years and years and years about pension reform, and suddenly from out of nowhere, there's a bill that gets passed. Now, I'm not poking fun. Sometimes that's the way it is in government. It's not strictly that way in Pennsylvania government. But we really don't know yet how the budget might affect the community colleges, because until the budget is passed and signed, we won't know, I guess.
Correct. And I think many of the points that were brought up before break are the points that we bring up to our elected officials, who certainly have lots of tough decisions to make. We do know the revenues are down. That's a concern. Anytime that revenues are down, that's a big worry for us, for the community colleges. There seems to be an increase for K through 12 and even PASHE right now, and a level funding for the community colleges. So I'd hate like heck to settle for level funding. But we are doing a very good job, 14 community colleges, letting the legislators know what it is that we do. So when we have these national news stories, where Jess's staff did a great job in our success in Brockway, those type of things do resonate. And it also complements all the face-to-face meetings that Ruth Purcell and I have with the elected officials. So I'm confident that the elected officials will certainly do the right thing. And hopefully that will lead to some kind of an increase for the community colleges.
Mm-hmm. Well, state officials we know were have to be aware of the success in Brockway. In fact, wouldn't the state officials approach you several years ago to offer to help out if you could establish something in Brockway? Because they needed something there. They wanted something there.
Yeah, Senator Scarnati, great point. And he's been a champion. And I met with him a couple of weeks ago. And when I share the numbers of 420 students, he's proud of that. I will say this, you know, we get requests all the time to go here, there, or everywhere. The reality as to how this works is that it makes it a whole lot easier and more doable to go here, there, or everywhere when you get support to do so, and you're not just doing it on your own dime. And whether it be Newcastle, Hermitage, Cranberry, or Brockway, we all get extra state support for those locations. Armstrong is so new right now that we haven't applied for state support. But that's a good model, I believe, of how it should work. We're in a day and age where we're being asked to do a lot of things, but there's not necessarily skin in the game from the people who ask. Here's a model where the Commonwealth puts skin in the game, and it's certainly paying dividends.
This kind of ties into something we were talking about earlier in our conversation before the break. I know you're always working on your master plan.
Yeah.
Is that, I don't know, is that 5 years ahead, 10 years ahead? How far can you realistically plan ahead?
Yeah, this is an interesting year because we have both our strategic plan, which we're calling Strategic Pathways, along with the master plan occurring at the same time. So there's an intersection in going forward, maybe also an intersection as it relates to me heading into my second decade as president. And I think that's very important. I talked to a colleague president in Vermont, and as a 10-year president, a lot of conferences for new presidents, a lot of conferences for aspiring presidents, even brand-new presidents and conferences for newer 3-4-year presidents. There's nothing out there for a 10-year president. Maybe life after presidency, that can be a nice consulting gig for me. And I talked to a colleague president in New York who's 10 years. And truly, it boils down to a fork in the road and the challenge of a new opportunity or the challenge of taking your institution and making it even better. And he reminded me something I forgot to mention at Cabinet today. There's literature out there that the real impact that a college or university president has on his or her own institution is after a decade. In other words, the research is that culture shifts for the 10-year president. That's fascinating to me. And he referenced the scholar that did the, I'm assuming, qualitative research. that you can't have a real impact unless it's a decade. So what I'm excited about as I enter the second decade is what's going on with our strategic plan and our master plan. And although the board will approve it at our board meeting in a couple of weeks, we had a great work session with the board and the foundation board. And Dave, one of the things that we have in the strategic plan is a real partnership with Downtown Butler. We've studied economic development models like crazy. Walla Walla, Washington, which deals with winemaking, Lorain County, automobile industry, Montgomery of Maryland, medical side of things. Altoona is phenomenal in what it does. And we're really looking to partner with the city and to elevate our presence in a downtown revitalization.
Hmm.
I say that humbly, that, you know, we're a strong institution, and I hope that's taken the right way. There are economic development models out there that focus primarily on the arts. I know that Mayor Stock tried to do that, attempted to do that with successes. There are some that focus on medical hospitals. Another one where there's a hybrid between meds and eds. Others that focus on millennials. But in each of the models, those economic development partnerships focus on leaning on a successful entity. And we say humbly that we think that we're that successful entity. And with what we studied, we really think that we could further transform what's going on in the city. And by the way, there's some very encouraging things going on in the city. Businesses that are moving in, you know, Penn Theater. To put all your eggs in an arts basket, opinion of one, I think that's difficult. But if you have the pie and arts are a part of it, and maybe you bring in a hospital, maybe you bring in a college, and you start transforming buildings that once had significance. You know, on Western PA, we're always referencing where things used to be or what the building used to be. You know, that used to be the 5 and 10. That used to be this building or that building. What Altoona has done is taken that connection to the history. And those are the buildings that have a historical significance, and those are the buildings that Penn State Altoona started converting.
Hmm.
And only did so with the equivalent of the CDC, donors, a partnership with elected officials. That's what the community in our name is. It's about partnerships. I told our board we cannot do this on our own, but look at what happened with the Heaton. You have the state buy in, you have Mr. Heaton, you have other donors, and it's a group of coming together. This goes back to the decentralization, playing on the connection to the community. And there's no other institutions of higher ed, from liberal arts to four-year universities, that do that better than the community colleges.
This is a fascinating area to explore. I personally have great concerns about the demise of urban centers, core mm-hmm. centers, because if you go back in history, this has been very important to the development of society. I mean, this mm-hmm. is a pretty big deal. You know, why did people gather in a certain spot? You know, was there stream power there yeah. that there could be a mill and then more things grew around it and so on and so forth? Well, how did that happen? Towns just weren't accidental.
Correct.
And when you look at the way that so many urban cores, urban centers have dissolved slowly but surely, you know, what does that mean for society?
Yeah.
It's an interesting question.
It came up in Vermont. So the future is talking about what's being lost in automation, certainly the jobs, but it is the community aspect of the workers. And that goes to your point. You know, why is Pittsburgh what it is? Because of the rivers, there's rationale for why cities, towns come up. And again, you know, when you automate, you lose that connection. But that's what a college brings, is the connection, and it's the vibrancy of the people. And another point that came up, although we have a thriving distance ed program, it's distance ed that is complemented by the on-the-ground bricks and mortar. We will never be a University of Phoenix. But there's a place for distance education. This is something we talked to the deans about. Several years ago, we weren't quite sure as to how distance ed would play out. Will it literally replace bricks and mortar? Yeah, you can make an argument that it's replaced some bricks and mortar, but look at what the Heaton is. The Heaton takes those distance ed students, those students who utilize the technology, and gives them community and place. And that's what's been lost with the decline of the steel industry and the mills in western Pennsylvania. That's what we feel we can bring as a strong institution of higher education.
And even that model ties in somewhat analogous to what I was talking about for towns and urban centers. The Heaton Family Learning Center, I can see, is already becoming a center of the campus, you know?
Yeah, it's. I think it's a lot in the diversity of, as Nick mentioned earlier, the funding for the library was diverse. It came from various areas. Mm-hmm. And the same with our offerings. Like, you don't ever probably want to put all of your eggs in any basket. You want to make sure that you have some diversity. So we're not going to all replace our bricks and mortar with online classes or vice versa. We want to be able to offer both so that we're adapting, you know, to the change, just as you were mentioning earlier about how the landscape is changing so much, and the colleges and universities that are successful are the ones that are kind of moving with it and adapting. I think, like, our next strategic plan, it's an exciting time for the college right now, not just because of the convergence of the plan, the strategic plan, our master plan, and Nick's second decade of presidency, but just what is involved in those plans. So we have communities as one of the pathways. Mm-hmm. So that's the one that we've been talking about with the connection to downtown. But we have students, resources, and excellence as the fourth pathway. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of it's diverse too, and in what we're addressing in the next 5 years. It's 2017 to 2022. So, to answer your question from earlier, it's a 5 year plan, and so is the master plan. But we'll be making improvements and moving and changing and trying to remain as strong as we've been able to in the past, giving us the position that we're in now.
It's a matter of attitude as well. You know, you can be. You can approach this with fear. If you look at this is a pretty drastic changes that are happening all around, or you can approach it and say, wow, what an exciting opportunity this is.
Yeah.
You know?
I mentioned that a long, long time ago on the show. Generally, the attitude for the average person is you buy high and you sell low. It's the opposite of what it is you should be doing. Think of when we were expanding. We were expanding in 08. Think of that.
Yeah.
And now, again, institutions are trying to grab enrollment and going into underserved areas. We did that 10 years ago. Now what we're doing is understanding our role as a social change agent. That excites me. That's that second decade. I think that our board is very excited. We'll never mortgage the farm. We will never do anything without those proper partnerships. And the Heaton has certainly been that example, that we do have the partnerships because the people believe in what it is that we do. We think that it is a very exciting time for the college. While others in some ways might not be a stretch to say are fighting for survival, here it is that we can take on something with these lofty goals.
A couple more things we need to talk about. We need to take a break, though, right now. First of all, what's happening over the summer at BC3, and what the heck is a college reset? Well, we'll talk about that in just a couple of minutes. Back to wrap up our conversation with our guests from BC3. Here on It's Your Turn on WISR right after these words.
Midday lottery numbers for you today. The pick 2 is 3636. The pick 3, 201201. The pick 4, 8290. The pick 5, 38465. The wild ball for each of those is 4. And the treasure hunt, 3, 7, 11, 20, and 27. And the estimated jackpot for tomorrow's treasure hunt is $10,000.
Moving from my home of 50 years was a little scary, but I wasn't safe at home anymore, and my daughter with her busy life, children and grandchildren, it wasn't fair for me to expect so much from her.
We looked together to find a new home and discovered New Haven Court at Clearview.
What made the difference were the employees and the residents we met. The residents said it was a great place to live.
New Haven Court at Clearview, a great place to live because it's a great place to work. 888-261-5753 or visit IntegraCare.com.
Welcome back, friends. Chatting on the It's Your Turn program today with the president of Butler County Community College, Dr. Nick Neupower, is here. Jess Matnock also here. She's the executive director of communications and marketing. Folks, this is not like, back when you were in grammar school or high school where the school shut down over the summer. It's not your father's Oldsmobile anymore. The Butler County Community College campus hums in the summertime, right?
Yeah, it speaks to that diversity Jess brought up.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the liberal arts that has everything to do with just an undergraduate, baccalaureate, or associate's experience. We have continuing education, emergency services, public safety, credit, face-to-face credit, online, non-credit, kids on campus, and that's some of what we'll be doing this summer.
For credit students, there's a summer session. There's one of your fast-track things for students mm-hmm. who desire to take a course in a very short period of time, very concentrated study for a few weeks.
Correct.
One of those will be starting?
So we had five summer sessions. So summer session three starts June 12th. And then we have a fast-track session that starts June 26th, and that's the five-week online concentrated curriculum that you just referred to. And we just heard at a meeting this morning that those classes, even though we're still a couple weeks out, they're almost full. So maybe we should offer more of those classes next summer, more classes within that session. There definitely seems to be interest there. And then it will be great to see the kids on campus for that summer enrichment program that starts on June 26th as well, and that runs through August. But we did just have an open house for the kids on campus for the community to learn more about the program and stop in and see the facilities, what classes we'll be offering this year, and then there still is another month to enroll. There's camps that start every week from that June 26th date to August 10th. So there's half day, full day. There's even before and after care options for working parents that, you know, might need to have their child come to campus for the full day.
Enrollment still open for these things? Enrollment's still open for
them? Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah. It's through the summer, because if a camp doesn't start until July, they can still enroll, you know, up until the start date of that camp.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, bc3.edu/KOC, which is Kids on Campus, and the full program is on our website.
And the same for our online classes for traditional college students. We have a lot of visiting students, and although they're filling quickly, our daughter had a friend who asked if there's still an opportunity for him to sign up for classes, and the answer is yes. I would really recommend for the listeners out there, if you have a son, child, granddaughter, grandchild, what have you, sign up as soon as possible, because the spaces are going very quickly.
Last summer, of course, there was frenetic work trying to get the Heaton Family Learning Commons all ready to go for the start of the fall semester. Are there any major projects this summer, or even maintenance projects that'll be done during the summer?
Yeah, there are always,
always. There's always a rain spot that needs fixed or something.
Our executive director of operations is phenomenal. It's a Butler name. Brian Opitz is just, we're blessed to have Brian. Boy, we run him so hard, and there's deferred maintenance. Right now there's a fire pump that's going in our public safety, the county, help make that possible with some capital dollars. And the Amy W. Wise Children's Creative Learning Center.
Oh, yes. I forgot about that project. Yeah,
it is well underway. Go back to that Western Pennsylvania lingo, you know, where the old bookstore used to be. That's down now. I don't know if you've seen it Jess?
I've seen the building down. I haven't seen anything new come up yet, but...
Yeah, so still taking things down and the digging, what have you. And we had an update of President's Cabinet today, and we're hoping for that to be open by January. So they are moving on that very quickly. It will be beautiful. Unbelievable. So from deferred maintenance to, we talked about some new offices with a lot of people who are retiring. We have a lot of people who are shuffling around as part of this college reset, including Dr. Katt announced his retirement. There was a celebration for him prior to us coming over. So basically make some office space available. So as low level as moving offices and people going from one to another, to deferred maintenance projects, a fire pump, all the way up to a beautiful children's creative learning center, we're very busy.
Mm-hmm. We've been working on some new campus map illustrations, and before I can even move to the next phase of that, we have something else new and changing on our campus. And I always say to Brian, slow down. I just got this version done. But he's constantly moving, and all improvements and good changes. And then knowing what's coming with the new master plan, what's going to be happening in the next 5 years, even more to come.
It'll be driving the people at Google Earth crazy.
Right.
Every time the satellite flies over, campus looks different.
Exactly. Right. Exactly.
How did commencement go and pinning and all of that stuff to wrap up the spring semester? That was fairly recent, a few weeks back.
Yeah, it went very well. I believe that the last time we were on the show, the nurses' pinning was that evening.
Yeah, that's right.
That's correct, yes. Mm-hmm.
So that was... really nice event.
And graduation, I think, was the following week or something like that.
Graduation was the following week on the 17th, and we had our highest graduating class in the last 10 years at least.
If not ever. I would think that with our enrollment being so high within the last 10 years, I can't see how we had enrollments or graduation numbers that were higher. So we've been talking about in recent history or since the turn of this, it was the highest number of graduates, which again is really interesting when you consider what some of the other universities and colleges are facing, certainly a lower number. It was a wonderful evening. I think the weather held out.
The weather was beautiful. We had Jay Kifo was our keynote speaker, and then Commissioner Kevin Boozel spoke for the alumni, and they both were excellent. They did great jobs, and President Neupower as well. We thought that with such a big graduating class, it would be a long evening, but it turned out to be fairly reasonable.
It was. We have one of those unofficial polls where everyone puts a buck in the hat and you guess what time graduation will be over. And it just hit me last year that probably the person who has the greatest impact on winning that poll was me. So I actually cut a few things out of my speech. I don't know that the audience would have known that. But our keynote, real quickly here, our keynote came over from it's escaped me right now where, but from a different country into the United States. Let's say 15 or so years ago. He started with an ESL class. He knew no English. As a matter of fact, he said he knew 10 words when he came to our country. At Cranberry, influence of Alex Gladys. Alex said, you need to go GED, graduates GED. Alex says, you need to go for an associate's. Gets, I think, two associates, then a bachelor's, then a master's. And now he works for a senior level position at Highmark and is considering a doctorate. As a matter of fact, said he will get a doctorate.
He started out taking an English as a second language class at
knowing 10 words at BC3.
Wow.
We've had a lot of great speakers. We've had the governor, the first lady, Governor Rendell's wife, Peter Verichetti, wonderful people. I think he resonated most with the students because... ESL to GED to two associates, and his message was, yes, you can. You can do this. It was a very good evening, and Jay and Commissioner Boozel just did a fantastic job.
Our guest from Butler County Community College, the president of the school, Dr. Nick Neupower, and Jess Matnock, Executive Director of Communications and Marketing. Don't forget, on tomorrow's program, we're going to be talking about horse racing, actually trotters, at the Meadows. And also tomorrow, our leadoff guest will be a sports guy, sports writer, sports broadcaster, Bob Tattern. Most of his work has been in the Valley area. That's where he's from. But he is a storyteller without match, and he'll be sharing a lot of stories with us, and we'll be playing some sports trivia tomorrow, too. So enjoy. Hope you can be with us. And speaking of enjoy, hope we enjoy tonight Penguin hockey here on WISR. Mike Lang, as only he can do it, calling the live radio play-by-play here on WISR. We'll be on the air with warm-up at 7:30 tonight. I'm Dave Malarkey. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. See you tomorrow. You're on It's Your Turn on WISR.